You have to feel sorry for the prophet Jeremiah. We don't know how old he was. We do know he thought he was too young. Whenever it was, without warning or permission, the voice of God comes to him, announcing that before he was even born, he had been sanctified and appointed as a prophet. His weak attempt at resistance is futile. And before the end of his first chapter, God offers him this little reassuring promise. The people will fight against you, but they won't prevail. His head still spinning from the experience, trying to remember all those verbs that God used: pluck up, pull down, destroy, overthrow. Jeremiah is sent off to begin his career as a prophet to the people of Judah. What's more, the words that he must speak are not easy words. In fact, Jeremiah is to spend his entire life's energy calling the people of God to get their words and their actions into proper alignment. He must express God's frustration that those who call themselves religious are leaving their religion at the door of the sanctuary. They are self-righteous and ostentatious in worship, but fail to live out the ethical commands of their theology. They preach justice, but do not live justly. They are moving too quickly down the wrong path, and they are headed into exile in Babylon. The prophet's message is devastating, but his context is even more challenging. Jeremiah must speak these words of judgment to his own people, his aunts and uncles and cousins and classmates. His role as a prophet forces him to predict the destruction of his homeland and the exile of his family. Throughout the book of Jeremiah, we find the prophet tormented by the responsibilities of being prophet in his homeland. Perhaps Jesus himself was reflecting on Jeremiah's story when he recited that well-known first century aphorism, "A prophet is not without honor, except in his hometown." How true that was for Jeremiah, and how much he suffered bringing painful news to those whom he loved. No wonder he resists. Like Moses, Jonah, Isaiah, and so many others, maybe some of us in the sanctuary today, Jeremiah attempts to deny the call of God. His objection is that he is too young to speak words of power and truth to God's people. It is an interesting and tempting excuse. One of my favorite lines ever written is the one that begins Reinhold Niebuhr's published diary, Leaves from the Notebook of a Tamed Cynic, which the great towering theologian wrote when he was a young, struggling pastor, 23 years of age. And Niebuhr begins his journal this way: "There is something ludicrous about a callow young fool like myself standing up to preach a sermon to these good folks. I resemble those remarks." So does Jeremiah, and so he cries out, "But God, I am only a boy, only a child, only a young adult." In the book of Exodus, Moses famously objects 5 different times to the call of God from the burning bush, using really creative excuses about his lack of oratorical skill or no credibility. His final objection, though, is the most desperate and the most direct. "Oh Lord, please send someone else." Have you been there? "Oh Lord, please send someone else." But that is precisely the point. Whether it be Moses, Jeremiah, or us, that is precisely the point when it comes to vocation and call. There is no one else. No one else possesses your unique combination of skills, gifts, and experiences. No one else fits into the puzzle of life in the place meant just for you. Despite our best attempts at resistance, the call of God is both persistent and patient. One of the great pillars of the Reformed theological tradition, of which our church is a proud member, is the affirmation of God's irresistible grace. We cannot outrun the grace or the presence or the call of God. "Where can I go to get away from you?" the psalmist asks. The answer, nowhere. I come to the end and I am still with you. God's irresistible grace. Speaking to a group of Presbyterian ministers and lay people last week, I made the comment, safe I thought, that I believe with great confidence that our specific flavor of theology is exactly what American culture needs most in the 21st century. After the speech and question and answer period, one of the listeners approached me with deliberate speed. In fact, I thought he was going to run me over as he came from the back of the room toward me. "How can you say that?" he boomed. "When our churches are suffering in every way imaginable, lost members, lost dollars, lost influence, lost churches, clearly Presbyterian theology had its day." Sometime in the 1950s, we fell behind the curve, and it's just not what people are looking for. We need something new. Now, maybe my new friend is right, but I don't think so. I still believe, with all my heart, that we have an answer for the lives of people today. I also believe that we need to find new ways to preach the gospel and reach people in the 21st century, that we need to be creative and energetic and inclusive and prophetic and engaged and forward-thinking. But I also believe that the sturdiest truths of our faith, if we boldly and humbly proclaim them, will be a breath of fresh air and an answer to the emptiness that plagues so many today. The irresistible grace of God. In a culture that insists that we must pursue what we desire, that we must have relentless and unending drive in order to attain success, love, happiness, and even salvation, we Presbyterians have this gospel truth to share. God pursues you. you need not chase the Holy Spirit down, because the Spirit of God is coming toward you. As Paul Tillich preached many years ago, you are accepted. Accepted by that which is greater than you and the name of which you do not know. Simply accept the fact that you are accepted. The first move is always from God to us, not the other way around. Jeremiah's call demonstrates this truth. God pursues Jeremiah before the young man even has a chance to consider his options, or call his mother, or read the fine print on the contract. He is given a vocation that is difficult, trying at every turn, but there is, as always, with the call, a promise. It comes in verse 8, and it comes from the voice of God. I am with you. That's all. And that's everything. That's all Jeremiah needs to know. And so he begins the work that God has given him. He speaks those difficult words of judgment to people he loves. He goes with the people of Judah into exile in Babylon. And there he speaks new words, words of hope and promise and freedom and joy. Having experienced the irresistible grace of God himself, Jeremiah can now deliver this good news to the people in chapter 29, I know the plans that I have for you, says the Lord. Plans for your welfare and not for harm. To give you a future with hope. Because he is confident in a pursuing God, Jeremiah clears his throat and pursues his own vocation in the world. And we can do the same. Because of the unfailing promises of God, we have been given the freedom to pursue with passion our vocation in the world. All of us have been chosen, set aside, sanctified, called, and commissioned for ministry. The priesthood of all believers. Another one of those sturdy theological truths that we proclaim. We have all been given ministries to pursue in the world. Parker Palmer has written a wonderful little book entitled, Let Your Life Speak. In the book, Palmer describes a discovery that he has made late in life. That the primary vocational question is not what should I do with my life, but rather who am I now? It's a question that we can all ask, no matter where in life we find ourselves. And it is a question whose most basic answer is, in fact, universal. Who are you now? Who were you yesterday? Who will you be tomorrow? You are a child of God. Your life is a gift that has been given to you, and you are called to give it back in gratitude to the one from whom all our blessings flow. The most wonderful and comprehensive definition of vocation I have ever encountered comes from Presbyterian minister and writer Frederick Buechner. He says, vocation is the place where your deep gladness meets the world's deep need. I would only add this. Once you have discovered that sweet spot where your joy intersects the world's need, pursue it with all your passion. One of my personal heroes is a man named Paul Farmer. I met Dr. Farmer when he came to speak at Duke University, his alma mater, in the summer of 2004. His life had just been the subject of a powerful book, Mountains Beyond Mountains, written by Tracy Kidder, and the two of them came together to give a joint lecture. Farmer and I share a love for the nation of Haiti and his work as a physician in Haiti's central plateau has drawn the attention of the international medical community for its stunning rate of success. But what moved me most on that evening in 2004 was his overwhelmingly contagious passion. In plain language, no small feat for a Harvard MD and PhD, he outlined the terrible suffering of the world and the incredible opportunities for service that makes a difference. On the yellow legal pad that I had brought with me to the lecture, I scribbled these words: "Remember this. Do the thing that most enlivens you. Yield to the call." We won't all move to a third world nation and found medical clinics to serve its people, but we can all follow the voice of vocation. We can hear the call of God as it comes to us through the community of faith and the circumstances of our lives. We can all yield, surrender to God's call. Remember the wisdom of Martin Luther King. Everybody can be great because anybody can serve. You only need a heart full of grace and a soul generated by love. We can all pay attention. We can all choose surrender over resistance. We can all find that sweet spot where the two meet. I love to tell the stories of the ways in which you all are serving the world and enriching your own life in the process. I love that on the second Sunday of each month, our narthex is full of aluminum pans waiting to be filled with food for the Common Ground Ministry to those living with HIV/AIDS. I love that you meet the needs of those in this community for hot meals, safe shelters, and warm clothing. I love that you respond to crises like the earthquake in Haiti with generosity and compassion. I love that you teach children and keep the nursery and clean the pews and bake casseroles and pray for one another. I love to tell your stories, the stories of how you have responded to the call. And I love the opportunity I have been given to join you in pursuing our common vocation in the world. Mary Oliver closes her poem, The Summer Day, with these lines: "I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?" Who are you now? What irresistible call has laid hold of your life? Where do you hear the voice of God and the needs of the world calling you? In a letter to the congregation a few weeks ago, I quoted one of my favorite lines by my favorite poet, W.H. Auden. You owe it to us all to get on with whatever you're good at. And so, in quiet moments of prayer, and through the voice of your community, listen to your life, and then surrender to the good news that you have already been claimed by God. Rejoice that your life does not belong to you, because this is the most life-changing truth that our faith proclaims. God pursues you with a future full of hope. It's simply irresistible. You belong to God.